DW Africa Link.
South Africa is still a nation searching for healing. 30 years into democracy, millions remain trapped in poverty, while unemployment has climbed above 30%. Some families lock themselves behind gates each night, fearful of crime. Inequality between black and white South Africans is still amongst the starkest in the world. And politics, once the hope of liberation, feels increasingly divisive and fragile. The country's leader Cyril Ramaphosa says it is time for the Mzansi nation to sit together, talk together, confront realities openly, and dream together in what he calls a national dialogue. But will this be the moment that unites a divided nation? Or is this just another expensive talk shop? That is what we want to find out. My name is George Okachi, and you're welcome to Africa Link, the podcast connecting you to stories that matter.
Africa Link, every weekday, here on DW.
South Africa's national dialogue is currently on course at the grassroots level. President Ramaphosa has framed it as a people-led process to tackle deep-rooted issues from poverty and unemployment to crime and land reform. Let's listen in to what he said while launching the months-long soul-searching initiative.
We are meeting at a time of profound challenges that confront our country and our people. Inequality that besets our people and a crisis of confidence in our institutions. We also meet at a time when the world is rapidly changing and our own ability to adapt and renew ourselves will define the next generation.
However, not everyone shares this optimism. The Democratic Alliance, South Africa's second largest party, has boycotted the dialogue, deeming it meaningless and a waste of taxpayers' money. Even former President Thabo Mbeki and several civil society groups have withdrawn, citing rushed and poor planning. Outspoken opposition leader Julius Malema has also voiced his skepticism.
We don't support this convention. We don't support the national dialogue. We know the demands of our people. We cannot spend 700 million of the money that we don't have. Our people need services. They don't want the talks. They are tired of talking.
Now, to get deep into this widely criticized soul-searching initiative, I'm joined by Reverend Soitwaho Navutalu, spokesperson for the National Dialogue, and our correspondent, Thuso Kumalo. And well, Thuso, let me start with you. From your reporting, how are South Africans embracing the initiative?
It's 50-50, but the mood has been that of appreciating to the government. I mean, it's very rare to have a government, especially in Africa, that says, please give us your views. We have been trying to better your lives, but it seems we have not been able. Give us your views. How far have we gone? Where are we lacking? What do you want us to do better? So there's excitement on that level to say it's a government that listens to people who are saying, no, we are suffering. There are issues that we need solved. And the government coming to people saying, okay, I'm giving you a chance. Say them out and let's solve them together. But on the other side, of course, we've got other people that have said, no, we know our problems. These problems that you want us to discuss in the dialogues are known. Why not concentrate on finding the solutions to them? So this is a 50-50. There are some people that are in full support having this chance, but there are some that are saying, no, let's put more money on finding solutions to these problems instead of repeating them, going to listen to them, and we are back to square one again trying to solve them.
Reverend Navutalu, we have some in support and others who don't. I want you to pick it up from the comments we've heard from the Economic Freedom Fighters Party leader Julius Malema. Our people need services. They don't want talks. They are tired of talks. What do you say about that?
I would say that the most important opinion should not be, for instance, from politicians or political parties. It should be from ordinary citizens. The ordinary citizens, at the moment, they have expressed the view that it is time for them to dialogue on issues and unite their voices in shaping this particular country. It has not been done before in this fashion, but it is important that the challenges that we meet now have not been there 30 years before. They were not there, some of them, during the drafting of the Constitution. They were not there during the drafting of the Freedom Charter in the late 50s. And we don't have a vision for our country.
But Reverend, I'm surprised you are writing off the importance of politicians in this process, yet you term it inclusive. So what do you say to skeptics who see this as just another talk shop with no real impact on the lives of ordinary South Africans?
I have been saying, and I repeat it, skeptics don't build anything, because skeptics means they criticize what others are building. This is meant for nation building. If people love their country and they are critical of a process which is not doing harm to the country, then maybe they should, if they don't want to participate, they should just stay out of it and observe and give a chance to those citizens who think that they can get something good for the country out of this dialogue. Skeptics have never built anything. You can show me anything that was built by a skeptic.
Thuso, the Reverend is saying skeptics have never built anything. But one major sticking point has been key political entities like Democratic Alliance pulling out. How significant is their absence?
The absence of any grouping in a national discussion is very significant. It's very significant in the way that if you look at the political parties that have pulled out, we've got the Democratic Alliance that pulled out. This is the second largest party in the country. This is the second biggest partner in the unit government, and they've got a constituency. So imagine if that constituency is not taking part in this very crucial discussion, the results are going to be contested in terms of they are not going to serve the interests of everyone. Let's talk about the economic freedom fighters. They are also a very large part, the very large support base. I mean, we talk about the legacy organizations that have pulled out. They've got constituencies that they are supporting. I mean, we're talking about one led by former President Thabo Mbeki. Of course, they are going to take part. The difference between the political parties and the organizations is that the legacy organizations are still part of the national dialogue, while these political parties have said they are out. But then the problem is that once you leave them in this planning stage, which was the national convention, the issues that are put on the table, they're also going to be contested even by the legacy organizations that are going to take part in the broader dialogue. So you needed to have all these groupings together, to have one mind, to have one focus, to have the same issues, so that as South Africans try to solve the issues that are facing the nation currently, we are able to pull together, people are able to focus on the same direction. But already, because of this back and forth and these disagreements, you may find that some issues will remain contentious even at the conclusion of the process.
Reverend, doesn't that concern you? Imagine going through this process for a whole year, only for it to be contested by those who you didn't see their significance to participate.
You see, we are saying this is a citizens-led dialogue. No particular political leader or party owns citizens, such that you can't assume that just because the Democratic Alliance has pulled out, people who voted for the Democratic Alliance will not participate in a nation-building exercise as citizens. You can't make that assumption. Much as we would love as many people to embrace this particular process as possible, the foundations which had formed the preparatory task team were of the view that you need about 33 sectors representing the totality of the South African 60 million population. You can't get everybody to agree on a framework in a convention, and then the dialogues are going to be rolled out in wards and sectors, and it's not a dialogue of the elites. Now we want citizens to dialogue, and we must not preempt what citizens are going to talk about. It's a platform, it's a framework for them to be able to discuss about the future that, or the future South Africa that they would like to want.
Well, that's fair enough. We cannot preempt, and neither can we make assumptions that if political leaders are not participating, their supporters would follow suit. But political entities are central to this process, Reverend. Why not propose a buy-in for them to join hands in this process?
Political entities as a sector are there, by the way.
Which ones?
UDMs, your ANCs, which is the biggest political party in the country. As far as I know, there are only now three political parties which have expressed a view that they are not going to participate. The rest of them are there. We need the people's interest to be projected right at the forefront by no one other than the citizens themselves.
Well, for the interest of time, let's not belabor on that point. You've made your case, Reverend. But let's talk about the money involved in the National Dialogue budget. 700 million rands, that is over 30 million euros. Surely, Reverend, this is too much. A Kenyan Gen Z listening now would tell you on your face.
It's quite unfortunate. I mean, 700 million is branded around all the time. There was never a budget of 700 million. Never, really. There was a draft budget which was done by the preparatory task team, including the foundations, given to the government, which was around 700 million, which the government did not accept. And also, in terms of the conceptualization of the rollout, the government will only be called upon to cover 60% of the expenses. The rest of the money, in money and in kind. In fact, civil society have already put in a lot of contribution in terms of resources into the whole process now, in terms of people who are volunteering, and they will continue to do so. The other people like the churches will contribute their buildings where the dialogues are going to take place. You might have heard that, for instance, the convention itself, the line item on the budget in terms of the convention was around 5 million rand. We paid nothing because one of the big institutions with facilities, the University of South Africa, offered their facilities free of charge. So already there are South Africans who are making huge contributions. Then you have got an NGO that is called Kagiso Trust, which contributed already 2 million rand for the development of the app and to pay part of the communications. And that is going to continue. Even though we explained to the media, there is something interesting that there is never a budget of 700 million. The media would not be, extricated from that 700 million figure. They kept on repeating it again and again and again.
Yeah, you know? Well, Reverend, I'm glad Thuso is here. Thuso, the Reverend says that this issue of budget is not as we've been reporting.
Yeah, as the Reverend has stated, it's not only the media, even South Africans, no matter how much they, as the leaders of the dialogue, they explain, the people keep on saying, there is money that's going to be used and that money is too much. But I think the other worry that comes from a lot of South Africans, the country is facing quite high levels of corruption. So when such money is branded around for a process that some people have still not bought in, there's this worry again that is it going to be used properly? Is it the best way to use this money? So those questions keep on coming. And the other reason why they keep on coming is because the budget has not been finalized. From political parties, they've been saying, where exactly is this money coming from? Of course, the Reverend has rightly said it. A lot of donations have come forth even at the convention and even during this process. But the bulk of the money is supposed to come from somewhere. And people asking questions, which services are going to be cut? Where exactly is the presidency putting out that amount? Where is it taking it from? What was it for? So I think those questions will keep on coming until we get to a level where there's finality in terms of that budget, where it is coming from, how it is going to be accounted for, and of course, by the end of the day, what is it going to achieve?
Reverend Thuso is hammering on matters transparency, and accountability. I even heard the President Ramaphosa admitting that there is a crisis of confidence in the country's institutions, how things are run. So I hope you understand where some South Africans are coming from.
The consensus of the people on the money and on the budget is most welcome, and it should stay there. They must not drop the ball. It is their money, after all. And it should not only be on the dialogue itself. It should be on any expenditure of government. They should keep officials and people responsible on their toes and make sure that there is accountability. The dialogue itself is true. The country is bleeding from corruption. And that's part of some of the things which are coming out even before we begin with the dialogue. But as to the question of where the money is going to come from, I think the government has said they will be able to find the money. And some of the places they find the money is that there are dialogues already taking place in a fragmented fashion within various government institutions. Mm-hmm. The national parliament has got their own dialogues, the provinces and the national departments have their own imbizos that are taking place. You have got a program of nation building and social cohesion, all those little things which are actually budgeted for. If government, I'm not saying that they're going to do that, but if they were to pull all those resources together, for sure, and include the contribution of money and in kind, we can be able to fund this very, very important process. What I can say is that it is more the value of the dialogue process that we should be concerned about. If we do think that this is something good for our country, mm-hmm. then it is worth paying for. It is worth the investment.
Okay, so what concrete steps are being suggested so far to ensure the dialogue produces solutions and not just words on paper?
The end result of this dialogue is going to be captured in a social compact document, let's call it a document, something like, if you have heard of, I don't know whether you have anything similar in Ghana, like what we call the Freedom Charter. Mm-hmm. So in South Africa, we are accustomed to national dialogues, which produces something similar, like the Freedom, way back in the late 50s, 56, people dialogued, gathered in a convention, and they emerged with a very valuable a vision of our country called the Freedom Charter. We have never had a national dialogue which produced nothing. And everything that has been produced by dialogues in this country has been most valuable. So this is an opportunity for us again to produce a vision for our country, similar to the Freedom Charter. But many of the challenges that we are going through as a country were not there during the time that our forefathers were crafting the Freedom Charter. So we do need to actually have another Freedom Charter, if I could call, for our country. That is going to be a light to shine on our country for the next 30 years or so. And it's going to inspire us and our children to actually have a better country, much better than what we have at the moment.
Thuso, beyond the politics, what do South Africans themselves want to see on the agenda, those who are supporting the national dialogue? Which issues come up and again in your conversations on the ground?
Topical in the issues is the economy that has created unemployment. As it stands now, we've got about 32.9% South Africans that are not employed. And economists are counting the percentages of youth that are unemployed up to 60%. So that's a worry. We've got a lot of people that are saying the future is bleak as long as the economy is not creating jobs. So they want that as number one on the table. Then we've got immigration as another hot point. Even during the convention, it came onto the stage. There are some people that are very passionate to say there are a lot of illegal immigrants in South Africa. that they accuse, of course, of taking the few jobs that are already sold. So they want that as well solved like yesterday. Of course, the issue of crime also is coming strongly to the people that we talk to. South Africans are saying we're not safe in our homes, we're not safe on the streets, our children are not safe, our mothers are not safe. The rate of women abuse and child abuse and killings of children, all that is getting out of control. And South Africans are saying we want that to be on the table in terms of what are the issues, what are the causes, and how do we stop that as a as communities and as well as the government. So the issues are already rolling out already as we speak now. But of course, going back again to the critics and to those that are doubting and those that are skeptical of the process, you've got mixed feelings as far as what will be the end product. I'm happy that the Reverend is part of the group that's leading the process. Already they envision some of the things that South Africa has gone through already, these discussions, these CODESA discussions and all that have brought solutions. So at least there is a vision. And some South Africans are very hopeful that it will produce something. But there are some that are saying, sitting on the fence saying, we'll see it, we'll cross that bridge when we get there.
Crossing the bridge when we get there. But what role do you see the media playing in shaping whether this dialogue succeeds or fails?
I think the media has to act as the fourth estate to try and hold the process to account, to try and hold those that are leading it to account, also amplifying the voices of the people, making sure they are not suppressed by any means. I mean, if you look at how robust the discussions were at that convention, and the media was able to amplify that, to send it live there so that the nation gets into that discussion, into that dialogue mode. It is the role of the media to do that. And also the media, of course, has to avoid taking sides in all this, trying to play the ball on the other side. As media, we just have to be truthful. We just have to amplify the voices. We just have to say what people are saying. And by the end of the day, whatever analysis is made by the media, it has to come from the people and from the process itself, so that we report fair and truthful every time.
Now, lastly, Reverend, before I let you go, my South African friends who I have spoken to about this issue have told me that the country has had many commissions, inquiries, and such types of processes aimed at making situations better, but nothing has changed. What makes this process, the national dialogue process, different?
This is not a commission chaired by a judge. This is a citizens-led dialogue, completely under the control of the citizens. What the outcome of it will be a well of fresh water from which future legislators will drink, from which future policymakers will have to drink, from which nation builders for our own country will also drink from. And it will be a well that anyone who dare ignore the aspirations of the people of South Africa for this country, because the citizens will have spoken and they are just about to speak, not only in the fragmented sessions, way of things coming up this way on that one, but in a very coordinated way. And I think everyone will have to listen to what the citizens are saying, uniting our voices and shaping our nation going forward. Thank you.
Africa is changing. Don't get left behind. Tune in to Africa Link.
What we've heard from Tuso and Reverend Nevudalu highlights both promise and the pitfalls of South Africa's national dialogue. On one hand, it is an unprecedented attempt to bring together the government, opposition, civil society, business, and communities. On the other hand, questions remain about its timing, cost, and whether political will exists to act on its outcomes. The challenges South Africa faces, that is poverty, unemployment, inequality, and mistrust in politics, are not unique. But the solutions must be. Can dialogue heal the fractures of a divided nation? Or will South Africans be left waiting once again for the promises that never materialize. We'd love to hear from you. What do you think of the national dialogue? Can it bring real change, or is it just mere politics as usual? Join the conversation on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Don't forget to subscribe and follow the DW Africa YouTube channel so you never miss an episode. This show was co-produced and edited by Isaac Mugabe. My name is George Okachi, and thank you for joining me on Africa Link, where we bring you the stories that matter.
DW, made for minds.